All right, we'll say good morning. Today's daf is Kuf Mem Hey, 145. We are picking up on Kuf Mem Hey, 145, and specifically, we are picking up with Lema. Hopefully, you did your homework yesterday. So, we're picking up four lines down from the top. Lema, tenu li bayli ve'esmach imo tenaihi. What I shared this morning is dedicated by Ari and Shoshana Lerner and family in honor of the upcoming bris of the new grandson of Said and Sima Haken, Bezras Hashem B'Sha Tovu Mitzlachas, today. May Hashem ensure the health of the baby and his mother and the entire family of Nachas from him, together with all of Klal Yisrael. Mazel Tov. Let's begin. Lema, Tinuli Baili Ve'esmach Imo Tanai. So let's remember again, as you saw in your homework yesterday, so there's an interesting machlokis, Kuf Mem Hey Amud Aleph 145a, five lines down. So remember again, the Gemara was discussing the idea that, let's say, the husband, man and woman do Kiddushin, but for some reason Nisuin doesn't occur. Right? They're not going to get married. So what happens? Is the woman obligated to go ahead and return the Kesef Kiddushin or not? So the Gemara suggested that in the case of where the husband died, and that's why there's no Nisuin, so she shouldn't have to return the Kiddushin. Why? Because she could just say, Tenuli Baili Vesmachbo, go ahead, give me my husband and I'm happy to get married. In other words, that the fact that the marriage is not happening has nothing to do with me. Nothing to do with me. Right? At the end of the day, I'm ready to get married. It's my husband, unfortunately, who's not here. So the Gemara says, say that this is a machlokes tanoim. Disanya, hama'aretz as ha'isha. So if a man goes ahead and does irisin, so then what happens? The marriage doesn't go forward. Marriage doesn't mean, in other words, nisuin doesn't occur. We'll discuss why nisuin doesn't occur, but the point is they don't end up completing the marriage. Rather, again, the union ends in death or divorce. So we'll say, so just one word of introduction here. The Gemara here is assuming that there is a ksuva that goes into effect after Kiddushin. Now remember again, you remember from our Ksuvas days that this is a machlokas as to whether or not does a woman have a Ksuva from Kiddushin or does she only have a Ksuva after Nisun. This is a machlokas. The Gemara is presupposing that in fact, again, a woman has Ksuva from Kiddushin. Now both say whether that's because the Gemara paskens according to that opinion, or you could also have a case where a husband obligates himself in a ksuva from Kiddushin. That's the easiest case. That's the Rashbam brings down. In any event, the point over here is, he's Mekadesher, and then for some reason, what's going to happen? There's not going to be Nisuin. So therefore, again, the husband or his estate has to pay her for a ksuva. Psula govam asayim va'amana mana. So ksuva, a psula gets 200 zuz, and an amana gets 100. Makom shena gula hachzir Kiddushin machzirin. So that's the ksuva payment, we'll say. What about refunding the Kesef Kiddushin. Remember the Kesef Kiddushin. So the Gemara says, Makom Shenagu L'Hachzir Kiddushin Machzirin. If you live in a place where the Minaga Makom is to go ahead and return the Kesef Kiddushin, then you do so. Makom Shenagu L'Hachzir Kiddushin Machzirin. But if you live in a place where the Minaga is not to return the Kesef Kiddushin, then you need not to do so. Divrei Rabbi Nassan. So also Rabbi Nassan seems to say, everybody will agree, he has to pay her the Ksuva, right? If the Nisuin doesn't occur, does she have to return the Kesef Kiddushin? Rabbi Nassan says it depends on Minaga Makom. It depends ultimately again on the custom of the particular place. Shkocham sponsorship. Thank you. So the Gemara says the following. Rabbi Huda Nasi says, Be'emes Amru, Makom Shenagu Lahachzir Machzirin. Makom Shenagu Sholahachzir In Machzirin. So Rabbi Huda Nasi says that the Minag is where they have the custom to return the money, they do so. Where they don't have the custom to return the money, they don't do so. So the Gemara says, one second, Rabbi Huda Hanasi, Hainu Tanakama. I don't understand. Rabbi Huda Hanasi is the Tanakama. They're both saying the same opinion. I was supposed to say, they both seem to be saying that what? That halacha lemaisa, if you live in a place where the custom is that if the Nisuin doesn't happen, you return the Kiddushin, so then you return the Kiddushin. But if that's not the Minaga Makom, then you don't do it. It seems to be seemingly straightforward. To which the Gemara says, El Alav, Tenuli Baili Ve'esmach, we'll say first wide line, Kuf Mem Hey Amad Aleph. El Alav, Tenuli Baili Ve'esmach Bo Ika Beinayhu. Rather, it would appear that what? It would appear that the fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Huda Hanasi and Rabbi Nassan is the case of Tenuli Baili Ve'esmach Bo. We'll say, let's say the marriage doesn't happen because the husband died. because the husband died, in other words, they did kiddushin, therefore he's obligated in ksuba. Shabbos, he got kesef kiddushin, but now the husband dies. So can a wife say, I'm not returning the money, because as far as I'm concerned, I'm more than happy for the wedding to go forward. Give me my husband, and I'll get married. Obviously, that's an impossibility, but the point that she's making is, the fact that the marriage is not progressing is not my fault. Because of that, I should be entitled to keep the kesef kiddushin. So the Gemara says, "Mechsura v'hachi katani." Here's how you have to read the Brayso. I will say, second wide line, "Kuf mem hamad aleph." Hamaares es ha'isha besula. I'm sorry, es ha'isha. A man goes and does erusin, and therefore, according to this Gemara, he does erusin, and therefore becomes obligated in a ksuva to this wife. So besula gove masayim va'amana amana. So the besula goes in and collects her ksuva of 200 zuz. The amana collects her ksuva of 100 zuz. When is this true? Da hader bei ihu. We'll say, when is this true? This is only true if he goes ahead and cancels the wedding. Literally, he reconsiders. Ava misa, but again, if she died, makom shenagu lahachzir machzirin. Ultimately, again, if it's a place where the custom is to return it, she returns it. Or I should say her estate returns it. Makom shenagu shalahachzir in machzirin. But if they live in a place, ultimately, again, where the custom is not to return it, so she doesn't have to return it. V'davka shemei sehi. But this discussion about minag makom of returning the money is only in a case where she dies. Ava meishu in machzirin. But I will say, everybody will agree that if the husband dies, the wife need not return anything. Why? My taima, yecholi hi shetomar, tinuli baili ve'esmachbo. Because Rabbi says she can say, give me my husband and I will rejoice with him. In other words, she could say, again, I'm more than happy to get married, just give me the husband. So the Marzava Ash Rabbi Hudanasi the Meimar, Rabbi Hudanasi says no. Be'emes Amru, in reality, Bein Mesu, Ubein Mesahi, whether he died or whether she died, Makom Shenagula Hachzir Machzirin. It will say, if you live in a place where the minag is to return the kesef kiddushin, return the kesef kiddushin. Rabbi Hudanasi says that really there's a question of what is the minag hamakom with returning kesef kiddushin. And that minag hamakom apparently seems to be independent ultimately of what? Seems to be independent of who died. Meaning, for whatever the reason that the marriage is not progressing, he died, she died, whatever it is, Rabbi Hudanasi says, it was just a question of minag hamakom. If you lived in a place where the minag was to return the kesef kiddushin, then the woman returns the kesef kiddushin. If the minag hamakom was that she doesn't return the kesef kiddushin, then she need not return the kesef kiddushin, to which the Gemara says, And Rabbi Hudanasi says, she doesn't have a claim to say, give me my husband and I will rejoice with him. In other words, she doesn't have a claim to say what Rabbi was saying. To say, I'm ready to get married. It's not my fault my husband died, or it's not my fault my husband decided to divorce me and not get married. I'm not giving up the kesef kiddushin because as far as I am concerned, I am still ready to get married. To which the Gemara says, Rabosai. So therefore, the Gemara suggests over here that the machlokes between Rabbi Huda Hanasi and Rabbi Nasan is whether or not a woman has the ability to make a claim to nuli baili v'esmachbo. Give me my husband and I'll rejoice with him. In other words, that she has the ability to make a claim that the marriage is not going forward. The fact that the marriage is not going forward is not due to any fault of my own, and therefore, again, I am entitled to keep the kiddushin money. To which the Gemara says, "Lo, no, this is not a proper interpretation of the machlokes. Rather, why? Because everyone agrees, Rabbi Osai, that when, let's say, the marriage doesn't progress, nisuin doesn't occur. Why? Because let's say the husband died." That a woman has the right to hold on to the kesef kiddushin because she could say, listen, as far as I'm concerned, I am still ready to get married. Give me my husband and I will marry him. The fact that that marriage can't occur is not my fault, but therefore, again, I am going to keep the kesef kiddushin. So the Gemara suggests everyone agrees that she's permitted to say that. So the Gemara says, "V'udemesu kol the amalo pligi." Therefore, again, in a case where the husband dies, and that's why the marriage is not going forward, everyone agrees that what? That she is permitted to keep the kesef kiddushin. So we'll say, so in this iteration right now, everyone agrees that when husband dies, wife has the right to keep kesef kiddushin. Remember, We're speaking about a case of a very specific case of where husband is dying between erusin and nisuin. Obviously, once they're married, there is no discussion about returning kesef kiddushin. This is only now, in this particular case, after now we've gone ahead and only done erusin. Husband dies, where we're holding right now is everyone agrees that she could keep kesef kiddushin. Okay, so the Gemara says, so what is the machlokes? Ki pligi shemesehi. Oh, I will say, the machlokes is what happens if they did kiddushin, and the reason erusin doesn't happen is because the wife dies. The wife dies, ki mesehi, v'hacha, v'kiddushin litibuin nitnu kamiflegi. I will say here, the Gemara says, is a fundamental machlokes of kiddushin litibuin nitnu. I will say, if you take a look, it's actually right across in the Rashbam. Litibuin nitnu, shimtamos, v'lo yiska lisa'ena, you avudim v'lo yasulo. So we'll say, there's a fundamental machlokes as to the nature of kesef kiddushin. Litibuin nitnu literally means tava, is like a lashon of sinking. So the shaila essentially is, is kesef kiddushin considered to be a sunk cost or not? Right? Meaning, when a man goes out and gives him a kesef kiddushin, do we essentially say, okay, that's it, meaning that's an investment he's making in the relationship with the hope that ultimately, again, nisuin will occur, but recognizing that for some reason nisuin may not occur, but there's absolutely no expectation of refunding of that money. Or do we say no? Kiddushin lav l'tibuin nitnu. When a man gives kesef kiddushin to a woman, Rabosai, it's with an expectation that what? That the couple is going to get married. If for some reason the marriage does not occur, then what? Then l'maisa, again, he should be able to get back the money. So that's the fundamental shayla. Rabbi Nosson savar kiddushin lav l'tibuin nitnu. Rabbi Nosson says that kiddushin is not a sunk cost, and therefore what? When she dies, and therefore the marriage, the nisuin does not occur, her yarshim or her estate have to refund back the kiddushin money to the husband. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi savar kiddushin l'tibuin nitnu. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says no. Kiddushin avosai is considered to be a sunk cost, and therefore what? When the woman dies and the marriage can't go forward, l'maisa again, the yarshim or the estate need not refund that money. But yet the Brisa Rabbosai seemed to hinge this on minaga makom, meaning the Brisa didn't seem to hinge this on whether or not you consider it to be kesef kiddushin a sunk cost or not, but rather it seems to hinge it on minaga makom, to which the Gemara says, Hakli Gamar, this is what it means to say, of sivlonos. Rabbosai, so now we are getting into something different. Sivlonos means, we loosely translate it as bridal gifts. But if you take a look at the Rashbam, v'sivlonos. The Rashbam said, v'sivlonos v'adai, v'ahum odin alacha, t'vim in hagit talyamil. So it says, we're going to see, and this, by the way, is an interesting shayla that comes up to this day. Now again, today it's different, because today, it's, the question is often regarding engagement gifts. Now understand, it's a little bit easier, because engagement has absolutely no status in halacha. Here, what they're talking about, Rabbi Bosai, is a similar idea, which were gifts that were given after kiddushin. So kiddushin occurs, and then what happens? Rashbam says, "Vohu tachshit shesholeach la'arusaso la'achar shekidsha." This is jewelry. Jewelry, and by the way, what we saw in Ksuv, this wasn't just jewelry. It could have been jewelry, it could have been clothing, it could have been food. Things that a man sends to his kala, to his mikudashas, to the woman who he has kiddushin with. Aval kiddushin vadai l'tibur nitha. So we'll say, listen to this. So we'll say, here's what the Gemara is suggesting. Both Rabbi Nasan and Rabbi Huda will agree that if husband dies, wife doesn't have to refund kesef kiddushin. Why? Because she can say, give me my husband, I'm ready to get married. So she doesn't have to return the money. The shayla is, what happens if she dies? Does her estate or her yarshim have to return the kesef kiddushin? So Rabbi Nasan says, yes, because kiddushin is not a sunk cost. Rabbi Huda says, no, because kiddushin is a sunk cost. Once a man gives a woman kesef kiddushin, no matter what happens, he has no expectation of getting that money back. So says the following. So what is the minhag ha-makom that the Brisa is talking about? That's what sivlonos. What happens if after kiddushin, husband gave wife gifts? Now what happens? Nisuin never occurs, either because of his death, her death, divorce, whatever it is. Does she or her estate have to give back the gifts? To which the Gemara says, Vaday makom shnagu lahachzir machzirin. But I said that will be talu aminaga makom. That will be dependent ultimately again on whatever is the general custom of the locale. I bahatani kani tani. So I said these times are like these other times this sanya because we say we learned kidsha bikikar. Now let's say a man was mekadesh with a kikar. Now we say kikar is a large amount of silver. Just going to send about 2,500 zuz worth of silver. So that's a pretty significant kiddushin, especially remember given the fact that we know Matthew Mikadosh Shemun with what? With a pruta. So okay, he's giving her a very large kesef kiddushin. So what happens? So Basula, we'll say now, in this case over here, the circumstance is that the Nisuan's not gonna happen. For whatever the reason, death, divorce, so kiddushin occurred, nisuin is not going to happen. So remember again, as we've established before, at least according to this approach in this Gemara, a woman even after kiddushin is entitled to ksuva. So what happens? So basula gova masayim va'almana mana divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says that the woman gets her ksuva in this case. Look at the Rashbam. Basula gova masayim zuz tahinu shnei manin vahinu chamishim shekel kamar basulos milvad kiddushin tito ksuvasa. So Rabbi Meir says that in addition to keeping the Kesef Kiddushin, she also gets 200 zuz for her ksuva, meaning a besula, and Amana gets 100. Rabbi Huda says, Besula gova masayim va'amana mana u'machzeres lo es hashar. So Rabbi Huda says that a besula gets her ksuva, and Amana gets her ksuva, but they have to return the rest. Sounds like, they don't get to keep the Kesef Kiddushin. That the only thing that these women get to keep ultimately is their ksuva, but not the Kesef Kiddushin. Now, of course, over here in this case, the reason why this is a little bit easier is because they have the ability to collect the ksuva from what? From the large kikar of silver that ultimately was given to these women as Kesef Kiddushin. So the Gemara goes weiter. Rabbi Yossi says, Kidsha be'esrin, we'll say if ultimately again, let's say a man goes ahead and was mekadesh with 20 shekel, no sein la shloshim chatzoin, so ultimately again, he gives her or he allows her to retain 30 halves. We'll discuss what this means. Kidsha be'shloshim, if he was mekadesh with 30 shekel, no sein la esrim chatzoin, he gives her 20 halves. So the Gemara says, my asking them. So what's the case over here? So before we get into the individual shitos, what's the case? Well, so obviously we know kiddushin is happening, nisuin is not happening. Why not? Ilei Moshe Mesa. If you want to say it's because she died, mi isla ksuva. So again, even those who say that there's a ksuva from kiddushin hold that ksuva goes to the woman herself. That ksuva claim is not powerful enough for it to go to Yershim. So if it's the woman that died, so ultimately, again, would there be any obligation on the husband to pay a ksuva? Ve'ela shemesu. Rather, you have to say the case of Rebbe says where there was kiddushin, then the husband died. Amai machzeres lo es hashar. Why does she have to return the kesef kiddushin in that case? V'neima, let her say, Tenu li baili ve'esmach imo. Why can't she say again, I'm ready to get married? The fact that the marriage is not happening is not my fault. I'm ready to get married. Give me my husband and I'll get married. Ve'ela ve'eishes yisrael shezinsa. Oh, and then we'll say, what's the case over here? The case over here is a man who's a mekadesh woman, right? And then what happens? She committed adultery. She committed adultery. That's why the nisuin is not going for her. So let's give her 1 second. Ubemai. Now what's the case? Iberatzon. We'll say, if she willingly had relations with another man, it's like ksuva. Does a woman have ksuva? We'll say, if a woman is a mizana, if a woman commits adultery, she loses her ksuva. We'll say, by the way, that's true. Even in circumstances, obviously, if you're putting her to death, that's one thing. But even in a case where she can't be executed, lemaisa, there is no obligation. Let's say where there's, you can have, we saw in Sota, there are situations where it's clear that a woman was mizana, but let's say not enough to satisfy the threshold, ultimately, again, of Nisas Bezdin, but there would still be a chia for the couple to divorce. Ultimately, under those circumstances, the husband is not obligated to pay ksuva. Ve'ela ba'ones. Rather, we'll say it has to be that, unfortunately, the woman was violated. So one says, if woman was violated, Mishrasha, I don't say, why does that impact the marriage? In other words, remember, with an Eishes Yisrael, if his wife is violated, she is still permitted to him. So the Gemara says, Ve'ela ba'eishes kohen shenensa. What's the case over here? Remember, the halacha is that if a wife of a kohen is violated, he is not permitted to live with her anymore. So we'll say, so the Gemara says over the following. Here's the case. A kohen was Mekadesh woman. And what happens? Again, she was violated. Now, as a result, he has to divorce her. So the Shaila Rabbeinu say now is the following. He's going to pay her ksuva. But the question now becomes, Is she permitted to keep the kesef kiddushin? B'kiddushin l'tibuin nitnu kamiflagi. And it was the fundamental machlokis over here is the same fundamental machlokis we saw before, which is, what is the nature of kesef kiddushin? Is kesef kiddushin a sunk cost? Once, meaning once you give it, you have no expectation ultimately of getting it back. Or is kesef kiddushin a refundable amount of money in the event that the intended purpose for the kesef kiddushin, i.e. ultimate marriage of nisuin, does not take place? So we'll say, just by the way, just the person thinks to themselves intuitively, it makes sense to say that, of course, kesef kiddushin is given for the ultimate goal of affecting nisuin. And one would say logically that if nisuin is never affected, of course kesef kiddushin should be refunded. The svara we'll say for the other side is that, remember, you can affect kiddushin with a nominal amount of money. Right, again, these are cases where a man's giving a lot of money. But lamaise, again, you can affect kiddushin with a pruta. Remember, again, with a nominal amount of money. So that's the logic, kind of, to say that if a man since kiddushin can be affected with a nominal amount of money, therefore, again, a man has no intention of getting that money back. Even if the marriage for some reason does not progress, it's such an insignificant amount. The fact that he can give more, does give more, is inconsequential to us. The fact that the mechanism of kiddushin could be affected with such a nominal amount of money indicates to us that kiddushin l'tibuinit. So that's the machlokas. Rabbi Meir sabra kiddushin l'tibuinit. Rabbi Meir says that kiddushin is a sunk cost. Therefore, again, once nisuin is not going forward, even though, again, it has nothing to do with the husband, in this case, with the Gemara setting it up, it was Ishas Kohen Shenansa, he doesn't get the Kesef Kiddushin back. Rabbi Huda says, Lavli Tibunin. Rabbi Huda says, no, it is not a sunk cost, and therefore, we'll say, if the marriage does not proceed because of some reason that is tied to her, then the Maisa, again, she has to refund the Kesef Kiddushin. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi, Misapkale, Iliti bun nitnu ilav. So what's Rabbi Yossi Shita is the following. Rabbi Yossi is not sure. He's not sure what to do with this whole situation. So what does he do? Behilchach, kidsha be'esim nosin la'shloshim, shloshim chatzon. Therefore, if he was mekadesh her with 30 shekel, I'm sorry, 20 shekel, he gives her 30 halves. Kidsha be'shloshim nosin la'esim chatzon. What's that? The idea ultimately of Rabbi Yossi is, Rabbi Yossi holds that this whole thing is mamon hamotel b'safek. Right? This whole thing ultimately, again, we're not sure what to do with the money. It's a safek. What do you do with mamon hamotel b'safek? Cholkin. You go ahead and you split it. So Rabbi Yossi essentially takes any doubtful amounts and he splits it down the middle between the husband and the wife. Fine. Amar Rabbi Yossi, farmin yuni. Amar Rabbi Nachman. Bechol makom shenagu lahachzir machzirin. We'll say in any place where the minag ha-makom is to go ahead and return it. Now we'll say we are assuming over here that the it ultimately is kesef kiddushin. A woman returns the kesef kiddushin. So the Gemara says v'tirguma narda. What's an example of a place where the minag ha-makom was that if for some reason after kiddushin nisuin did not occur? Nisuin didn't occur. Now what was an example of a place where the minag ha-makom was to return the kesef kiddushin? Narda. The minhag ha-makom in Narda Basai is that if for some reason a couple did kiddushin, but nisuin never happened, it was minhag ha-makom, woman would return the kesef kiddushin. So the Gemara says, Shar Bavel Mai, what do they do in the rest of Bavel? So Rabba of Rav Yossi, Rav Taravayu, Mohare Hadri, Kiddushi Lo Hadri. What's this interesting? Look at the Rashbam, Mohare Hadri. It's five lines up from the bottom. Mohare Hadri, Shesholeach Acher Kiddushin, Vein Sivlonos, Hadri b'misas ha'isha. We'll say, listen to this. So Moari are gifts. Sivlonos. So we'll say, the Gemara says, Rabbi Rav Yosef say, that any gifts given after Kiddushin, we'll say, are returned. Which, by the way, you should know. So in other words, any gifts, let's read the rest of the line. Kiddushin lo hadri. So we'll say, Rabbi Rav Yosef say, Kesef Kiddushin wasn't returned. Meaning, even if for some reason Nisuin did not occur, Kesef Kiddushin is not returned, but bridal gifts, the minhag ha-makom was, were returned. So if the couple never ends up getting married, so lemais, again, you have to get back those gifts. Which I both say, the logic over there is quite intuitive, which is, when people give you wedding gifts, they're giving you gifts for the intention of getting married. Right? Obviously, if you weren't getting married, I would not have given you the blender. Right? Meaning, it's not the pshat that I had a burning desire to give you a blender. Right? Obviously, again, I'm giving that to you because it's almost like it's understood those gifts are given out tonight. Meaning, there's almost like a certain built-in condition to that. Therefore, you know, we always say bridal gifts are returned. Amar Papa Hilchasa Bein Shemes Hu, Bein Shemes Hi, I'm sorry, Bein Shemes Hu, Bein Shemes Hi, Vahadr Bei Hu. So the Gemara says, whether he dies, whether she dies, whether ultimately, again, he retracts on the Kiddushin, more hadri, Kiddushin lo hadri. So what's that? Papa Paskins, that in all of these cases, we'll see there's one exception to this case, which is the one case missing over here, is where what? Where she decides not to get married. So we'll say, whether it's a case of where he simply decides he doesn't want to marry her, or he dies, or she dies, the halacha is the Kesef Kiddushin need not be returned. What's the one case where the Kesef Kiddushin has to be returned according to Rav Papa? Hadra ba ihi afilu kiddushin nami hadri. However, Rav Papa says, if she, Rabosai, decides that she doesn't want to get married, or she backs out, then what? Then she has to return the Kesef Kiddushin. So it appears, in all cases where Nisuin doesn't occur, bridal gifts always have to be returned. Bridal gifts always have to be returned. And what about Kesef Kiddushin? So we'll say, in every single, let me say differently, the only case where Kesef Kiddushin has to be returned is where when? Where she backs out. If the wife says, I'm not going through with this, then okay, that's fine, that's your prerogative, give back the Kesef Kiddushin. In every other case, he dies, she dies, he backs out. In all those other cases, she is permitted to keep the Kesef Kiddushin. So the Gemara says the following. Amemar said, Kiddushay lo hadri. So we'll say, listen to this. Amemar does not want it. He says, no. He says, Kesef Kiddushin, I'm sorry, Kiddushay lo hadri, Kiddushin is not returned. Right? Why not? We'll say, Amemar seems to be saying this in all cases. Kesef Kiddushin is never returned. Why? This is actually quite interesting. Gezerah Shema Yomru, Kiddushin Topsin Ba'achosa. Both say, listen to this, out of concern that people will say that this man will be permitted to marry the sister of the woman with whom he had Kiddushin. I will say, now what's the halacha? The halacha is, you know, not only are you not permitted to marry your wife's sister and you're married to your wife, but you're also not permitted to marry your wife's sister when? Right? Even after you divorce her. In other words, even after a man divorces his wife, he's still not permitted to marry her sister. And Maimar says, the problem that we're concerned about over here is the following. If a woman returns Kesef Kiddushin, Abosai, who returns Kesef Kiddushin, what does that look like? What does that look like? That looks like a Mekach Tos. That looks like Kiddushay Tos. That looks like there was something wrong and the Kiddushin itself never occurred. Kiddushay Tos, how you? Therefore, what Rabbi say, if it's Kiddushay Tos, then would this man be permitted to marry the sister of the woman with whom he had Kiddushay Tos? And the answer is yes. But of course, that's not the case. The case of Rabbi say is there was no Kiddushay Tos. We're just saying that, listen, wife, if you back out, so it's only right that you repay your husband or your ex-husband the Kesef Kiddushin. So Amemar says, but if we do that, I'm telling you, we're going to get ourselves into problems. Therefore, Amemar says, don't return Kesef Kiddushin. Kesef Kiddushin has never returned, no matter what the grounds for the dissolution of the marriage may be, out of a concern that people will come to think that this man could then marry the sister of his ex-wife. So the Gemara says, V'had Rav Ashi Bedusi. So the Gemara, I'm sorry, Rav Ashi Amar, Gita Mochi Achala. Rav Ashi says, what are you talking about? That's not true, because at the end of the day, there's going to be a get. Right? Remember, you're going to both say, even if she returns the Kesef Kiddushin, there's still a get. The fact that there's a get, therefore what tells us that this couple was married, they're now divorced, and therefore the man can't marry the wife, the sister of his divorcee. V'had Rav Ashi Bedusi. The Gemara says, Rav Ashi's statement is a mistake. Why? Because we'll say there could be some people who hear about the returning of the money, but don't hear about the get. Which I will say, if you think about it, is an interesting thing, because generally, we assume that if there's one thing that's associated with a get, it's what? It's a kol. That usually gittin themselves a kol. Noise associated with it. I mean, people talk about it. It's known. It's public knowledge. Okay, so we'll say, so how do we paskin in this case? So listen to this. So the Shulchan Aruch says, this is in Evan HaEzer, Simon Nun Sif Aleph. Ha-mekadesh ha-sa-isha. If a man is mekadesh a woman, then what happens? I will say, so there's kiddushin, but no nisuin. Marriage doesn't occur. Either. Bein shechazer he, bein shechazer hu, bein shemes he, bein shemes hu, o shegirsha, ein ha-kiddushin chozrin li-olam. I will say, Shulchan Aruch paskins that a woman never has to return kesef kiddushin. Once she gets Kesef Kiddushin, then ultimately again, so we'll say, so she does not have to give that back. So we'll say, so just to understand how that plays out contemporarily, Chasin Akala under the Chuppah, he gives the ring, Hari Atni Kudesh Aslis, certainly more than a Shav Epruta. Then what happens after Kiddushin, she says, you know what, I've decided we're not soulmates. Hopefully they didn't pay the caterer yet. And then what happens, right, and they get divorced right then and there. So she keeps the ring. She keeps the ring. That's where, again, the ring was a few, used to affect Kiddushin. So Kiddushin is never chozer. And again, we'll say the Taz brings down on this. What's the reason? Gezeira Shema Yisavu Shal L'Shem Kiddushin V'yikach HaChosa. We'll say for exactly what Rav Ashi said over here. Rav Ashi, Ameimar, excuse me. Exactly what Ameimar said over here, because we're concerned that if she gives back the Kesef Kiddushin, it's going to look like it was Kiddushin. So we'll say, Satzei Paschal, Allah Kalamaisa, you need, a woman never needs to return Kesef Kiddushin, no matter what. Meaning, no matter what the circumstances, ultimately, again, of the dissolution of the marriage. What about Sivlonos? So we'll say, Shulchan Aruch Paschal is over here. Hashalech Sivlonos Lebeis Chamov, Bein Merubin, Bein Mo'atin, Yachziru HaSivlonos. So we'll say, however, bridal gifts, any gifts given from the chasen to the kala, ultimately, again, have to be returned in the event that the marriage does not go forward. So what is that? Then this is even more halachah l'maisa today, because today, often, bridal gifts are given even before there was any kind of kiddushin. So I'll say, so obviously in that kind of case, halacha l'maisa, any bridal gifts have to be returned. And again, also often becomes a difficult matzav in situations regarding broken engagements. Yeah. But certainly again, an engagement ring has to be returned. And certainly again, any gifts given to the chasen and kala, either from chasen to kala have to be returned, and gifts to others should be returned as well. Fine, so we go weiter. The Gemara goes, Shashoshvinus Nigvus Bebezin. Remember again, the Mishnah told me that one could collectible say Shoshvinus are what we'll call reciprocal groom's gifts. Right? That if I go ahead and I'm a groomsman for Reuven and I give him a gift, so Reuven has to give me a gift when I get married as well. And literally it sounds like that gift is actually enforceable in Beis Din. That if Reuven comes to my chasen and he doesn't give me a gift, I have a claim against him. There are five things said about groom's gifts, groomsmen's gifts. Nigvis b'beis din. Number one, they're collectible in days. In other words, which means it's an enforceable gift. It's meaning it's an obligation. Now we're going to see lav dafka the amount, but it's an enforceable gift. V'chozeres ba'onasa. Ultimately, again, it will say it comes back only in its right time. In other words, that if I go to Reuven, I'm a groomsman for Reuven, and Reuven gives me a gift, I have an obligation. I go to Reuven's wedding, I give him a gift. When I get married, Reuven has an obligation to give me a gift, but he only has an obligation to give me a gift when I get married. When I get married, that's bo nasa. The ain ba mishum ribis. The boss says, there's no din of ribis. I gave Reuven two times chai, and Reuven decides to give me five times chai. So there's no ribis. There is no interest in that transaction. Amud beis. Then ashrias misham tasa. Shmita does not wipe out this debt. So I said, this is interesting, because we just said before that it's collectible in Beis Din, which seems to indicate to me that once I go to Reuven's chasana, Reuven has a debt against me. Or I should say, I have a debt against Reuven. He owes me now reciprocal shoshvinus. Yet, Shmita doesn't cancel it. Ve'ein ha-bechar nota ba-pishnayim. A bechar ultimately, again, does not get a double portion in this shoshvinus. Fine, so I said, now we're going to go through each of these things. Nigvis be-Beis Din. So I said, it's collectible in Beis Din. My time, Kimil v'damya. Because I said, ultimately, again, it's like a debt. Meaning, what does that mean? What that means is, once I go to Reuven's chasen as a groomsman and I give him a gift, so it's understood that there is now a debt. Now, I must say it's an interesting debt because it only comes about when I get married, and who knows when I'm going to get married. But lamaisa, again, it's considered to be a debt, therefore enforceable in Beis Din. Veima mishum ribis. But I must say there is no ribis, there is no interest in it. Because I must say ultimately, again, my intention is not, if I go to Reuven's chasen and I give him X, and then he comes to me and he gives me X plus Y, his intention, I must say, ultimately, again, is not to give me ribis, because remember, even though Reuven has an obligation to give me a reciprocal groomsman's gift, there is no obligation as to the particular amount. Therefore, if he gives me less, that's fine, and if he gives me more, that's from the goodness of his heart. Then Ashes Mesham Tasa, Shemitah does not cancel such a debt. The Lo Karina Belo Yigos, from both sides, Shemitah only cancels debts that have an actual quantifiable due date. And specifically, again, when that due date, especially, is during the Shemitah year. But because this particular debt does not have a quantifiable present due date, Therefore, there's no lo yigos. We'll say lo yigos means you should not press the debtor for collection. That doesn't apply in a case like this, where I know that there's a debt, but it's a shtickel amorphous, because again, it's dependent on when I ultimately get married. Next, v'en ha-bachar notal pishnayim. A bachar, the Rosh Hashanah does not get pishnayim in Shushin. It's supposed to listen. In other words, in this case over here, let's say somebody paid Shushin. So this is the case we ended with yesterday in the homework. So remember again, let's say again, so Reuven came to my wedding. I went to Reuven's wedding, but by the time I got the opportunity to go and give the gift, Reuven died. So I'm still going to pay Shushin to the estate. The Bechor of that estate does not get pishnayim in the Shoshvinus. Rather, the Shoshvinus is shared amongst all of the brothers. Why? Then a Bechor notal b'raikim mochsa. Because also remember again, a Bechor only gets pishnayim on that property owned by the estate at the time of the death of the deceased. At the time of the death of the patriarch, we'll call him. But lemaisa, any monies that come later on, ultimately the Bechor does not get pishnayim. Fine. Amrav Kahana. So the general rules, and this is just interesting, by the way, to see they actually had like these rules for how to deal with shoshinos. They had these rules for how to deal with these groomsmen gifts. So klal of the shoshinisa, we'll say the klal of the shoshinos is the following. Haba b'masa ibay le'lemesa. We'll say, if you look at the Rashbam, if you go across on the left side about 10 lines down, haba b'masa, also sha'al v'hatsur shoshinos haba b'yir, so listen to this. Reuven is at my wedding. And what happens now, I'm in the city, Reuven's getting married. But I chose not to attend the chasana. I'm in the same city, I chose not to attend the chasana. That's fine, but he bought the mesa. I'm still obligated to give the gift. In other words, I'm still obligated to give the reciprocal groomsman gift. He was a groomsman at my wedding and gave me a gift, even if I choose not to attend that chasana. I'm in the same city. I choose not to attend. I still have to give him the gift. Shama kol tabla. This is actually interesting. So apparently, even though we often don't think this is a Jewish concept, but I was in the city, and what happens? I heard the wedding bells. So it was common if somebody was going ahead and making a chasana, they would ring the bells of the city in order to invite everyone to the chasana. So what happens? See, boy, leila mesa. So if I'm in the city and I hear the wedding bells, even if I choose not to go ahead and go to the chasana, nevertheless, I have to pay my reciprocal groomsman gift. Lo shama kol tavlo. Supposed to listen to this. Let's say I didn't hear the wedding bells. And by the way, when we say didn't hear the wedding bells, means I was never invited to the wedding. So what happens? Iboile la'aduye. So we'll say, so Reuven should have invited me to the chasana. Tar umas isle. So I have a claim. I can be brigus at Reuven. Reuven didn't invite me to the chasana. But yet, shalumi mishalim. But I still owe him a reciprocal gift, which I will say is incredible, right? So again, so these are the minhagim of the shoshino. So if I was a groomsman, if he was a groomsman for me, even if it turns out that he did not invite me to the chasana, I still owe him money. I still owe him a gift. So this is amazing. So the Gemara says, "V'ad kam," and we say, "How much? How much gift? How much of a reciprocal groomsman gift do I have to give to someone who didn't even invite me to their chasana?" Listen to this. Amr Abaye, Nogu b'nei ginona. So listen to this. Nogu b'nei ginona. So we'll say, so in general, the minhag by groomsmen was the following. Adzuza aisi v'kapei, achli b'karsi. We'll say, the general assumption was that when you go to a chasana, you eat at least a zuz worth of food. Right? So the idea over here is, the principle we'll say is, that your gift should exceed the amount of your cost for the wedding party. We'll say it's an interesting yisod. Right? So your gift should exceed the cost for the chasana. In other words, whatever you're paying should ultimately, again, cover your cost and then some. So the assumption is the groomsmen go to the chasana, they're eating at least a zuz worth of food. Therefore, what we'll say, ad arba mishalim palku. So we'll say, therefore, again, if I would have normally given a gift of 4 zuz, but again, this is a case where I wasn't invited to the chasana. Right? So if I normally would give a gift of 4 zuz, so we'll say, the Gemara is essentially saying is like this. You take your gift, and what do you back out of the gift? Right? The value of the food you would have eaten. You didn't eat anything. Therefore, you could subtract that off the top of the gift and give the remainder. So if you'd have normally given 4 zuz, mishalim palku, you give 2, Mikan ve'ilech inish kechashivuse. We'll say, now this, by the way, is going to blow your mind. Look at Rashban. He says, kechashivuse, lefi mashu choshuv umevi harbe, uregilin lechabdo b'mine ma'adonin, yifchisu lo midmei shoshviniso, kefi masha ocha. We'll say, this is amazing. So they must have had, I don't know exactly how this worked, but apparently when you showed up at a chasana, at the door, you presented your gift. And depending on what you presented is what menu you got to partake of. So, you know, you bring chai over here, the hot dogs are to your left, right? You bring a little bit more, the carving stations are to your right. So it's actually quite amazing. So I say, so the idea over here is, which is an incredible, by the way, just as an aside, as awkward as this sounds, from an economical perspective of ensuring that weddings do not become crushing burdens. What this type of system does do is allow you ultimately to go ahead and manage costs. So meaning essentially, the food that you are preparing is in direct correlation to the amount of money that the chasan and kala are bringing in. I'm saying, it's awkward, I would love to be a fly on the wall at a chasana like this, right? But if you think about it, just, let's say, a lot of these things, by the way, there's a lot to be learned, because clearly, chazal, you know, we live in an unprecedented age of wealth, Baruch Hashem. But it's amazing to see how chazal did certain things that were cost-saving measures in order to be able to preserve the general. It's the same thing that we saw with the chasana taking place in the house, right? This idea, what does that do? Like we saw before, it pares down the guest list, number one, and also allows the chasana kala to have an asset after the wedding is finished, as opposed to just paying, having a beautiful event, but then you don't have anything other than the video afterwards. So once I see the idea of the Gemara says the following. Therefore, if you're not invited to the chasana, so you could go, you still have to pay the shoshrinus, but you could deduct the amount of food that you would have normally eaten. So listen to this. Let's say again, when I got married, so Reuven was my groomsman, but we made a big chasana, public display. And Reuven wants to have a more private, smaller wedding. So I have the right. What the Gemara is essentially saying is, the reciprocal groomsmen gifts are only obligatory if the weddings are similar. So in other words, if I made a bigger wedding and I invite Reuven, Reuven was my groomsman, when Reuven gets married, if Reuven is making a small event in his backyard, I could say to him, listen, when you make a big event like I made, I'll give you the groomsman gift. But Lamaisa, now if you're making this smaller wedding, I'm not obligated to reciprocate. In other words, we'll say, the reciprocity are only when the smachot mirror each other in some way. But if the simchas are dramatically different, then the groomsman is not bound by reciprocity.
Yet if he isn't invited, he has to pay him.
Correct. I'll say emo because, again, remember, this is viewed much more. We started this out kind of as saying, oh, it's such a beautiful display of friendship. Now what we're saying much more is it's a financial obligation. So because of financial obligation, my being invited, not being invited, to a certain degree is irrelevant. He gave me something, I have an obligation to financially reciprocate. Now what the Gemara is saying is, the obligation of reciprocity is only intact if the two events are similar in nature. Similarly, asimo besula, ubikesh lasasimo ba'amana. For me, it was the first marriage. Reuven is marrying an almana. I could say to him, Yachal Omer Lo, Bebesula Es Imach Der Shazi. He said, Imi, listen, you gave me a shoshinus for a first marriage, for a besula. I'm only obligated to give you your shoshinus. If you marry a besula, but you married an almana, therefore I'm not obligated to give you shoshinus. Let's listen to this. Asa Imo Bishnia, Ubikesh La'asos Imo Berishona. So I'll say, listen to this. So let's say again, for me it was a second marriage. So Reuven came to my wedding, he gave me a shoshinus. Now Baruch Hashem, Reuven is marrying a first time. So I could say to him, Yachal Omer Lo, L'chishatissa Isha Acheres Esimach. Do me a favor, when you invite me to the second marriage, right? When you invite me to the second marriage, I'll give you shoshinus, the same way you gave me shoshinus for my second marriage. So let's listen to this. So I got married to one woman, invited Reuven, and Reuven is now marrying two women. So Yochel Lomar Lo Ba'achas Es Imach The same way that you gave me shoshvinos when marrying one woman, I'm only obligated to give you shoshvinos. And marrying one woman, you're marrying two, I'm not obligated to give you shoshvinos. So we'll say, so the idea we had the Gemara trying to express is the obligatory nature of the reciprocal gift of shoshvinos is only when the simchas, only when the weddings mirror each other in some basic ways. But if they don't mirror each other, then the obligation of shoshvinos is not intact. Atir nechasin, atir pumbi, zeh balagalat. So we'll say now we're going to get into a little bit of agaratov, beautiful agaratov. So what happens? If a man rabbi say is rich in nechasin, atir nechasin, if you look at the Rashban, he says, atir nechasin, asher misados ukramen vezesim anirim lebrios, vegam atir pumbi, hagaloi kigon rov behem ashakadon. We'll say if a person is wealthy in property, and a person is wealthy ultimately again, bepumbi. Pumbi means, I will say, public. In other words, there could be a person who's wealthy, but no one knows about it. No one knows about it. Atir bepumbi means a person is wealthy and everyone knows about it. Not God forbid, like a person is showing off their wealth, but that a person has a large number of assets, so people are just able to see. You know, in Rashbam's example, it's herds. Right, I have herds of sheep. So right, I have sheep everywhere. So people see that I have a lot of assets. So what says, what is this comparable to? The Gemara says this is comparable to Zubal HaGadus. This, we'll say, ultimately, again, is like someone who darshins agarita. So I'll say, somebody who is proficient in darshining agarita is like someone who is publicly wealthy. What does this mean? Look at the Rashbam, third white line. Shedarish b'chol makom berabim, ubatei mishtos, shedarish v'yam tovim makom nesav l'shmoa, v'yesh kol kachma balash miyosh mitok shein agadot srichos. Ian is supposed to listen to this. So somebody who is proficient in darshining agada, stories, mashalim, I will say everybody loves stories. So what happens to the darshan who darshans with stories and darshans with mashalim? So we'll say, so everybody flocks to that shir, right? Everybody flocks to that talk. That person, that Talmud Chacham, is considered to be like someone who's publicly wealthy. Everyone ultimately, again, wants to partake in that wealth for the simple reason that it appeals ultimately to the master. So we'll have to stop over here. We're leaving off a little bit in the middle of some beautiful agarata. We will, Amir Tashem, continue with this tomorrow. You'll check, we'll put out on the WhatsApp what the timing is for tomorrow. Everything is moved back a little bit because Emir Tzashem, there's a special Shalashuddis with Emir Yeshiva here tomorrow, so everything is moved back just a few minutes. So we'll put it on the WhatsApp. We'll continue with this Agarata, and I'll record the Parsha thought a little bit later on, post it on the WhatsApp as well. Shkoyach.